It's time to play like a Jet with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Wilson going to the air. Chased out by Daquan Jones. Wilson looking end zone, wide open, touchdown! First NFL touchdown for Zach Wilson. And it goes to Corey Davis.
Down the middle, he's got it. Elijah Moore, the 20, the 10, the 5, touchdown!
Jones has just caught flat-footed. What an excellent, excellent route.
He'll hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know who that's?
The Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the PlayLikeAJet.com digital studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And we are going to answer some mailbag questions with somebody who's never answered mailbag questions with me before, so I'm excited to have him on to do that. You've heard him on the show before, and I'm sure if you listen to Jets podcasts, you've heard him many times because he is the host of Jet Nation Radio, editor over at JetNation.com, Mr. Glenn Naughton. Glenn, what's up, brother?
Not a whole lot, Scott. You know, this is that that part of the season where there's just nothing going on. Teams are doing OTAs, but, you know, really they're running around in helmets and shoulder pads and you know, shells, if you will, and just kind of taking it light. So not a whole lot football-wise, but other than that, look, life is good. How you doing, buddy?
I got to say, right now, I am a pretty happy guy, but that is mostly because I think that we are at the point in time where you look at the Jets, and on paper, it looks like a promising squad, and we have not had the optimism beaten out of us yet. So I'm hoping to hold on to that, and maybe we'll get ourselves a really good season here from this team so we can have something to root for even as far as December.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I noticed something about myself just a couple of weeks ago while I was thinking about this team. And I don't know if I'd ever picked up on it before. But for some reason, when this team is terrible, which they have been for many years, more times than not, I tend to find the positive. I look at everything and, like, you know, try to project the best scenario for every player, assume guys are going to hit their ceilings and all that. And then when things, as they now appear to be turning the corner, I feel myself starting to look at this and go, hey, slow down, everybody, slow down. This positive talk is getting a little bit out of control. You know, there's no way this team is going to win more than 6 or 7 games. But then my mind starts to wander into, you know, does Becton stay healthy? Does Wilson take that next step? Is Saleh really a defensive genius who had no pieces last year, but now he does? Could this be a 9-win team? But I really have a hard time making that turn into optimism as I'm seeing more people jump on the optimism bandwagon. I kind of a bit of a contrarian, whether they're good or bad.
Glenn, with that, let's answer some questions about this team that we're all so optimistic about right now, at least for the time being. Let's hope that they keep our optimism alive for a while. First question comes in from George Wise. He says, do the Jets make any more significant signings or trades before the season starts? Maybe they get Larry Ogunjobi or Kwon Alexander. That's still up in the air at the moment. Beyond that, I don't think there's going to be anything major. Maybe some minor signings or a minor trade. Like, I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, the Jets got Nate Hairston for a conditional 6th-round pick in the summertime. You could be looking at something like that, but I don't think there's going to be any kind of major deals.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the free agent names we've heard as guys they've already brought in. You know, those are possibilities. But I agree. I think, you know, if you can, if a tackle shakes loose, similar to what we saw with Morgan Moses, or if a guy becomes available that they think they can have for a mid-late rounder, that's probably the biggest spot they need to address at the moment, is a little bit of depth at tackle, given Mekhi Becton's history, given the fact George Fant just had his knee scoped. Fant had some injuries early in his career, but really hasn't been an issue since coming to the Jets. But I think that backup tackle spot, if one of those guys were to go down, you don't want Chuma Adoga or Max Mitchell to be a guy, you know, who you're looking at starting 8, 9, 10 games for you.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in from Jason Oliver. He says, a lot of units were very bad last year. Which unit do you expect to see improve the most? Also, what, if anything, gets you excited about the upcoming season? Which unit do I expect to improve the most? I would say this is going to be a tie between the edge rush unit and the corners, because the corners were not very good last year. I know that throughout the year, people were touting Bryce Hall and Brandon Echols, and they did better than expected, but they still were not good. And now you go out and pay DJ Reed, you go out and draft Sauce Gardner at number 4 overall, and that's going to be a massive improvement. And as far as the edge rush goes, you were looking at John Franklin Myers playing out of position, Shaq Lawson was rotating in there, Bryce Huff, although he was hurt for a bit, and now you add Jermaine Johnson, a first-round pick, and hopefully, knock on wood, a healthy Carl Lawson. That should be a much improved unit this year. Plus, they got Jacob Martin from Houston, who's pretty solid depth. So you put all that together, and I think that those two units should be very much improved this season.
Yeah, listen, I agree, and it's funny. I promise I'm not stealing an idea here. This is a little bit ironic. I'm actually working on an article right now discussing the most improved groups on the roster because there are so many. The one I'm focusing on at the moment, fully agree with what you just said, but the tight ends. If these guys come, if Conklin and Uzama and who knows how much playing time Jeremy Rucker gets, these tight ends were not good last season. And I think that if you look at this offense and the way they would like to get guys more involved, if it's, you know, it's sort of a product of the guys last year weren't very involved because they weren't very good. And I think that we're going to see a huge, I would say, look at the numbers the tight ends put up last year. I wouldn't be surprised if that doubles this year. But right along with you with edge, I mean, they've gone from having close to nothing there. I mean, John Franklin Myers can play the edge a little bit, but you'd rather have him inside. So yeah, by going Lawson, Johnson, adding Martin, those are huge additions. And at corner, you've gone from Hall, who I kind of view as, maybe might be a number two one day. You know, can he rise to the level of a borderline one? You know, that remains to be seen. But I think he could hit his ceiling at a solid two. But now you've got, you know, Sauce Gardner, who obviously is projected to be a number one corner, and you got Reed on the other side. The improvement there should be phenomenal. And this is part of the reason, as I said before, you know, these are critical pieces that Robert Saleh didn't have last year. So I think he got a pass for giving up 500 plus points. But if he's the real deal and these players deliver, I think the groups you mentioned are going to be key in turning this thing around.
Next question comes in from Fergus Obi-Wan. He says, which undrafted free agent do you think has the best chance to make the roster? I'm going to go with Zonovan Bam Knight, the running back from NC State. Part of the reason I'm saying him is because he's the only one that I knew going into the draft. The other reason is because I think he's a legitimately good player. I know he did run a lot behind Ike Mukwanu, and that certainly helps, but he's got speed, he's got moves, he can make plays as a receiver, and he's got the versatility as a kick returner. I know they got Braxton Berrios. I know at running back they've got Breece Hall and Michael Carter, but he's a guy that could potentially stick. If not on the roster, then certainly has a chance to make the practice squad, but he's a legitimate player. I think there's a possibility that he could make the roster.
Yeah, I agree with Knight having the best chance. He's probably the highest profile guy they picked up. You and I discussed this year. You know, even with the hundreds of hours of games I watched, there were only a couple of guys who I had watched to any degree that I was familiar with. And that was Bam Knight and, of course, Tony Adams, the DB from Illinois. I was actually watching Kirby Joseph pre-draft, and Adams jumped out at me, and so I started watching him a little bit. He's a guy who's, you know, really good speed, and he's played multiple spots in the secondary. He's played some safety. He's played some corner. So if they can add a depth piece who can play a couple different spots and bring a little bit of excitement or electricity to that secondary, I think he has a chance. But they really did this year with the undrafted guys. They went they took a lot of, you know, not just small school, but I mean, you know, guys that colleges I'd never heard of, you know, in Indiana, University of Pennsylvania. You know, they went really deep to get some of these guys. So there's just not a lot out them to even look at them after the fact. But those are the two I would go with.
Next question comes in from Gabe Pellucci. He says, after seeing how the draft played out, would you rather have had the Tyreek Hill deal get done, or are you happier with the 4 picks in rounds 1 and 2? This is an interesting question because let's say the Tyreek Hill deal had gotten done. It would have been 35, 38, and 69 for a later third round pick and Tyreek Hill. So essentially, you would have been looking at a deal similar to what ended up happening with the Jets trading up for Jermaine Johnson in terms of them getting back that late third rounder. So they probably would have still gotten Jeremy Rucker. They would have gotten Sauce Gardner at number 4, and let's say Jermaine Johnson at 10, because if they had traded for Tyreek Hill, they're not going to be taking a wide receiver. So when you look at that, the trade sort of comes down to Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall for Tyreek Hill. It's an interesting question because Hill is obviously an elite receiver, top 5 talent, and certainly he is going to be a major difference maker for the Miami Dolphins, and he should help Tua a lot. That was a big part of the reason that the Jets wanted Tyreek Hill. They thought he could accelerate Zach Wilson's development, but also that he would be able to beat press in the AFC East, which is the primary mode of defense for the secondaries in that division. In the short run, I think Tyreek Hill will probably be the higher impact player than those two guys. In the long run, it really comes down to how good you think Garrett Wilson can be. If you think Garrett Wilson can be a number one or number one-ish type wide receiver, then the Jets are better off keeping their picks because they would get Wilson on a really cheap deal for 5 years. They get Breece Hall on a cheap deal for 4 years, and those will be two important pieces of the offense. If you're not as high on Garrett Wilson and you would look at Tyreek Hill and say, well, maybe he's only going to be elite for 3 more years and you got to pay him a lot more money, but he will accelerate Zach Wilson's development and help the Jets win quicker in Wilson's rookie window. So it's a tough question. I could go either way on it. I would say that I guess in the end, it may have worked out for the best. Check back with me after the Jets play the Dolphins and Tyreek Hill has 250 yards receiving and 3 touchdowns, and I might change my mind.
Yeah, I agree. It is a tough one. I think what puts me, I lean in favor of the way things played out, preferring that. And that's only because I'm having a really difficult time getting used to seeing receivers getting QB1 money, mm-hmm. Especially guys in their late 20s who might only have a few good years left in them. That scares the hell out of me. So I would prefer, you know, if not for the fact, you know, as I just mentioned with the tight ends, you've improved on so many different spots on offense. It's not as if it's if Tyreek Hill or Garrett Wilson will be the only ones helping move Zach Wilson forward. I think the addition of Laken Tomlinson and the drafting of Breece Hall, I think there are now enough pieces that no one guy is what's going to make or break it. And I think that paying that much money for a 27, 28 year old receiver just scares the hell out of me, because if a receiver like that loses a step, that's it. He's a completely different player. It's not like he's this huge physical guy who can adjust his game and start, you know, boxing guys out more and doing things he doesn't normally have to. He's a guy that when he loses a step, he's going to be a completely different guy. And at that price, that scares me.
Next question comes in from Michael Palace. He says, what are reasonable stat expectations for Zach Wilson in 2022? This is always tricky, but I'm going to say you're looking at maybe 3,500 yards, 20 to 25 touchdowns, and a completion percentage in the low 60s. I'm just trying to be realistic here because Wilson was, for the most part, very, very bad last year. Now, I know he played better down the stretch when he came back from injury, but he didn't put up eye-popping numbers even during that stretch, even though that game against Tampa Bay was excellent. If you look at the actual numbers, the stats, they weren't great. So if you look at the progression of where Wilson was last year to where you expect him to be this year, statistically, it would be unrealistic to think that he's going to make some sort of insane jump. So with that being the case, I'm going to say around 3,500 yards, 20 to 25 touchdowns, let's say 12 to 15 interceptions, and a completion percentage around 62%.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think that those are kind of the ranges I would have him in. I would say around 23 touchdowns. The interceptions, I'm hoping, aren't that high. I'm hoping he continues playing the way he did late in the season, protecting the ball, hoping to see, no more than 10, 11 picks. And yeah, the TD numbers will be, I'm thinking just over 3,000 yards. But in terms of, because I've seen people make some wild predictions and I think they just, to see a guy go from what Zach Wilson did last year and think he's just going to come out and throw 40 touchdowns in year two, just it's not a thing that happens. But at the same time, in looking at the additions we've discussed, if guys play well, maybe he does throw 28 or 29. I don't know, but if I'm going to Vegas and I'm going to bet, I'm going to say, somewhere between 22, 25 TD passes, 34, 3,500 yards. And, I really hope he gets that completion percentage over 60%. And I think that we might see that with, again, having some and create some better targets in the intermediate game with the addition of the tight ends and, of course, the way Hall can catch the ball out of the backfield.
Next question comes in from John Jetson. He says, who is your dark horse player on the current roster to climb the depth chart and become a solid contributor this year? Conversely, who is someone expected to have a role as of now but may get cut before week one? Dark horse player. I'm going to go with Jacob Martin. I haven't watched a ton of him, but the little that I have watched, he looks pretty impressive. And Brett Coleman, who is a big Houston Texans fan and who's been on the show and really knows football, has told me that he really likes Martin and thinks he could be good in Salah's scheme. So I'm going to say he's the dark horse. He may rise up, especially, and I hope this doesn't happen, knock on wood, if Carl Lawson gets hurt again, they may really need him. As far as guys who are expected to have some sort of role but could be gone before week one, I'm going to go with Chuma Adoga. I don't expect him to have a major role, but he does play when guys get hurt, and he does play generally very badly. I think they're going to find a way to get somebody after camp cuts, and Adoga will be out of here.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with a guy who could rise, who I really liked last year when they took him, Jonathan Marshall, the DT rookie last year. Only saw a handful of snaps, but you watch his college film, and the guy was an absolute terror, spent a lot of time in opposing offensive backfields. And then the guy that could be impacted by that is Sheldon Rankins. I don't think he's as on steady footing as a lot of people assume, especially with the addition of the ends. I know Robert Saleh likes to rotate his guys through, but I think we're going to see John Franklin Myers playing on the inside an awful lot more. So those inside guys will get rotated through a little bit more. And I feel he's a frustrating guy, Rankins, because at times he looks absolutely dominant. Like if you clipped his best plays together, you would think he was an all-pro. But it just doesn't happen often enough. So if there's one starter I look at who I think could be gone, it would be him. And Jonathan Marshall would be my guy who I think not enough people are talking about who could make some plays for this team.
Next question comes in from Michael Christopher. He says, after watching Joe Douglas's last three drafts, it's evident he values premium positions. Moving forward, do you think he will draft more like the Ravens, where they take BPA in non-premium positions, or the Eagles, where they never take non-premium positions, such as linebacker and safety early? I would say that Jordan Davis is not necessarily a premium position, and they took him early this year. So the Eagles, from time to time, will deviate. I think it's going to be a mixture, though. I think Joe Douglas is going to sort of feel out where the board is and what he needs, and especially once the Jets hopefully get a roster that's more complete, he'll have more freedom to pick positions like linebacker and safety in the first round. So I think it's really going to depend on roster construction and who's available and exactly what the strength of each draft is, and he'll figure it out from there.
Yeah, I think what you said is the key is getting a roster that's good enough that you have that sort of luxury of saying we don't have these dire needs that we must address, so we therefore can just take the best guy. I think that's where you lean. I think, you know, as needs arise, even if you do put a better roster together, I think you'll go with the best player that fills a need. I think when people say best player available, I always say, you know, what an amazing coincidence that like 90% of the time, the best player available on a team's board is a guy that they just happen to need. You know, of course you're not going to say, yes, we just took this guy and he's the 11th best player on our list, because people are going to say you're an idiot and you're going to get fired if he busts. So, yeah, I think Joe Douglas will. The goal is to get to a point where you legitimately can just say, let's just take the best players because we're good enough at every spot, you know. But of course, you will as everyone deviates from their system from time to time. If you see a guy that is such an enormous upgrade over a player you have, then you go with that guy.
Here's another question from Michael Christopher. This is an interesting one. He says, where do you think Elijah Moore and Elijah Vera Tucker would have been picked in this year's draft class? Would both have been the best at their position group on most teams' boards, since this wasn't a very strong draft? I've said before that if I were picking in this draft, Elijah Moore would have been my top receiver. I think he was better than any of the receivers available in this draft. It's well known that I didn't love the receiver class here, and Jameson Williams' injury dropped him down a little bit for me. You could have made a case for him over Elijah Moore, but I just think Elijah Moore is special in a couple of different areas. He has those elite traits. I know he's on the smaller side, but he has elite speed, elite route running, and elite elite hands. Those three things make him potentially deadly. So he would have been wide receiver number one on my board if he had been in this year's draft. And Elijah Vera Tucker, same thing. I think it's pretty clear if he was in this year's draft, he'd have been the top guard on the board. I don't think it would have been even close.
Yeah, I think AVT would have been my top guard. Receiver, maybe a healthy Jameson Williams would have given Elijah Moore a run for his money. But I think in terms of what this year's class offered, I think Moore and his ability to just make a play, you know, find the end zone from anywhere on the field, I think he would have been my top guy as well.
That's going to wrap up part one of the mailbag. Visit playlikeajet.com and the Play Like a Jet YouTube channel to check out everything we're doing over there. The Thunder from Down Under, Luke Grant, has got some great All-22 breakdowns of all the Jets' draft picks. Plus, he just did a review of Zach Wilson's improvement after he came back from injury last year. Watch all the videos and subscribe to our channel if you haven't already. Visit our store, teepublic.com. That's teepublic.com. We've got the John Franklin Myers, Quinn and Williams Bless You, Thank You shirt, the Zach Says Go Long shirt, the Zach the Ripper shirt, the Play Like a Jet logo shirt, caps, mugs, hoodies. It's all there, teepublic.com. That's teepublic.com. And be sure to give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and playlikeajet.com.